Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
126.
Nice. That was good. Oh, 126. I forgot that I did that.
No, I like the nice.
Wow, guys, this is a really fun episode because we are starting chapter 17, which is the second last chapter of the Gita.
Oh my gosh.
Guys.
I know. That's exciting. And also like, wow, I can't believe we're almost done.
What a journey. What a journey. Thank you for listening to making it to episode 126. If you're still listening and you're listening sequentially, thanks for being with us on this journey. If you're listening randomly to random episodes at random times,
it must be very confusing.
I hope you get it. But yeah, you want to start us off?
Summary for our last...
Yeah, so, we ended the last time, chapter 16, Divine and Demoniac Natures. And it's very interesting how 16 now flows into 17, because it's almost a very natural continuation, because 16 ended with a contrast between people who reject scripture and don't attain perfection and those who accept scripture and attain perfection. So from there, Arjuna is now asking another possibility of, okay, what about people who reject scripture and act according to some other faith not based on scripture? What happens to them? Mm. So that's the connection. Mm. That's the continuation from 16 to 17. It's not like a totally different topic. It's a continuation. So it's interesting because that's not the norm. We normally see a completely different topic.
Let me tell you about this. And let me tell you about that. And you get all the facts. And now they're more like, okay, based on what you said before, how do we move forward from that?
Exactly.
Cool. Yeah. Okay. I feel like that's good. If you want to check out the previous episode and catch up before you listen to this one, go ahead. Otherwise, I'm ready.
The invocation, please, let is.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Yananjana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them.
Priya, with the invocations yesterday, I kind of just wanted to skim through a little. And before skimming, I said alone the invocations because I started reading and it felt like, wait, what am I reading? And then I thought, I haven't done the invocations. That kind of like you channel, please, help the mood that I'm going to receive this in. And you channel the parampara, the disciplic succession of teachers. So it's a very potent invocation. And I thought of that yesterday.
It changes the energy. It changes the mood. You're connecting with all the teachers again.
Yeah. I think it's a lovely way to start. It's like respects before we even begin.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Chapter 17 is called The Divisions of Faith.
Interesting.
Text number one, Priyadarshini.
Arjuna inquired, O Krishna, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scripture, but worship according to their own imagination? Are they in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance?
Ooh, one more time?
Yes. Oh, nope. Arjuna inquired, O Krishna, what is the situation of those who do not follow the principles of scripture, but worship according to their own imagination? Are they in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance?
So is Arjuna basically saying like, and I think he's brought this up, but like, what if you're just doing things whimsically, right? And you're just like not following exact direction that's in the books and the Vedas, but you're just kind of like whimsically going around being like, I'll do a little bit of this today, a little bit of this today. Ooh, and I'll throw in a little bit of this today.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I always wonder what that fully means. Like, is it like, are they talking about, worshiping demigods instead of Krishna? Are they talking about like, if I say, okay, instead of offering a flower to Krishna, I'm going to offer him
peanut butter?
Exactly.
Whimsically.
I was going to go with like a fake flower. Like, or just some, because maybe I want it to last longer. That's mm-hmm. based on my concoction and my imagination. It doesn't really have the same teachings as saying, where you offer, you know, a fruit
say
flower.
Why? Say it again. It sounds like Shelly sells, she sells better. Nice. Okay. But like, it could be any of those things, right? It can be like your demigod worship or like doing things not according to what actually Krishna wants, right? Mm-hmm. Krishna says, I want this, 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 and this, right? I want a flower, a leaf, water. What's the last one?
Fruit.
That's it.
That's why peanut butter, I was like, is that? Well, I guess doesn't fall in the categories. Okay, that would have worked too.
I think it is a few things. Because then even in the purport, Prabhupada says like about putting a human in a position of a god and worshiping a human as if they're God. So it could be a few things, demigods or humans or... It's just kind of like having faith in something that's not really bona fide.
Yeah, that's so prevalent, especially in India where there are so many like gurus that people worship as if they are God, which is so nuts because there's nothing in scriptures that say that any human can be God. Krishna is God, right? And so when you put all of this awe and reverence towards a normal mortal human being, sure, they might have some great qualities, but like if you say, oh no, this Babaji that I met, he claims he is God and I'm going to worship him as God.
Right.
That is whimsical worship. That's not according to scripture.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, I was just thinking more along the lines of what are some things where people can assess themselves for whether they're being whimsical? So like, what are some like everyday things that maybe we think, and I don't know actually, like I'm trying to rack my brain because I'm thinking like, well, is Sri Vishnu technically a speculation? Like when you offer food and you just go, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, or is that like bona fide and good to do?
Let's not question that one.
We need that one.
We're not going to mess with that one. Okay,
keep it on the down low. We need that one.
What Priya's referencing for anyone who doesn't know is like a shortened version of a prayer. Instead of offering, like saying the whole prayer to offer our food to the Lord, to Lord Krishna, we say a little bit of a quick Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, if we want to take a bite of potato chips from the recently opened bag.
Yeah. I think that, oh, sorry. Did you guys want to continue?
No,
on that?
Go. I mean, we're going to
answer what she said.
Yeah. I think like, cause I don't have time to read Devedas. Okay. I don't have time to read. I don't even have time to read this book, to be honest. And so I love this book, but I think I'm just going to follow what Krishna says in this book. I can't like do all of the scripturals of all of the little books and all the big books and all the Vedas and all of the like whatever Krishna says in this book. That is what I personally follow.
No, like, yeah, but like, okay, for example.
Your question's interesting because it can be very nuanced. It can be in subtle ways we do what you're saying or in overt, obvious ways.
Yeah, like for example, okay, this is one other potential one that you guys tell me what you think about it. So you go to an astrologer, a Vedic astrologer, and they give you remedies for like your karmic debts, right? They say like, chant this mantra or do this worship or do this thing. And a lot of times these are like worship this demigod or this version of Krishna or this or this or that. Now, the things that are relevant to Krishna, like prayers about Krishna, for Krishna.
Check.
Yeah. All good, right? That works. But like things that are like to demigods and this and that, like, wouldn't that be motive goodness still?
Yeah.
But like not technically aligned? I don't know. Like just curious.
No, I mean, like I got a remedy for Lord Ganesh. And I think Lord Ganesh he's kosher. I mean, what's the Hindu word for kosher?
That himself was a very bona fide statement.
He's bona fide kosher, right? Because he got the boon from some...
But he's a demigod if you look at it from the Bhagavad Gita perspective in general. So like how it's not a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but I do feel like in this case, when we're asking like this is more outside of the Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Nowhere in the Bhagavad Gita does Krishna say worship Ganesh or Shiva or this or that. Mm. Right.
And I think it can happen in very subtle ways of what are we putting our majority of faith and trust in? Is it our spouse, our parents, like on a subtle scale, what is governing a lot of our decisions on a day-to-day moment?
Yeah. I think for the astrology example that you mentioned, I think if you really pay attention to the fact that like Krishna is everything, Krishna has also said that he is the demigods, right? Mm-hmm. So if I get a remedy from an astrologer that says, hey, you need to pray to Lord Ganesh to calm down K2 or whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. Me personally, I do it in the mood of Lord Ganesh is part and parcel of Krishna. And so by worship, I'm just, this is a vessel through who I am worshiping Lord Krishna. Why are you giggling?
No, I'm watching how she's looking. I'm watching your explanation. I'm like, let's see this unravel. Let's watch.
You're like, Shamli's like eating popcorn. She's eating popcorn and watching this go down.
No, I think it's, I mean, anything that can get us closer to Krishna is good, but I'm just curious, and I personally just, it's more of a mental consideration about like, that's not necessarily in the scriptures.
I would love to heal my Ketu though. Okay.
But also Arjuna says this also, right? He goes, are these activities or these people in goodness, passion, or ignorance? So we're not saying that if you are worshiping a demigod for whatever reason, like for example, okay, I'm really thinking of demigods. I wish I had other examples because like they just don't come to mind. So if you guys think of something, let me know. But like, for example, like certain cultures, I think Punjabis or Gujaratis, I don't know. They have like a particular ritual they do to protect their husband's well-being, and then they do particular a ceremony. Indians, yeah. A lot of these little cultural things are not necessarily
in scripture.
Bhakti yoga,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but they're not bad. They're probably in the mode of goodness. They're like, you know. So I'm just curious about that kind of perspective.
You're being Arjuna here, Priya, because he's asking similar questions. Prabhupada expands in the purport, saying like, yeah, basically Arjuna's saying like, those who worship something, maybe they worship gods, demigods, or men, do they attain success in their efforts? And that's what Arjuna's asking Krishna. And I think they will explain, but I think it's like a sliding scale. Like if you're operating in the mode of ignorance, at least go to the mode of passion. If you're in passion, go to goodness. If you're in goodness, then what you're saying, worshiping Krishna maybe would be pure goodness, transcendental goodness. I don't know. I think Prabhupada will explain it, but yeah, Arjuna wants to know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's the no, you're right. We're going to figure it out because literally he asked a question and we're all debating the question. But I think the intentionality is really important.
Intentionality with
a
million percent
vision towards Krishna.
And it was me asking that question wasn't a matter of judging those situations because I think there's a lot of good in that. It was more out of curiosity because I'm not Indian. Also, I have this perspective of seeing very much what the Indian culture is and then seeing bhakti yoga. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it can blur for some people where Indian traditions or cultures kind of blend into Krishna consciousness. But because I'm not Indian, I see the differences and I'm like, oh, but is that something I should adopt? Or is this, you know, and it's just a curiosity because what is it? Right?
Yeah. So I think you're right. I actually like struggled with that growing up too, because my parents moved from India to America, to New York, and they had Indian friends and then they had temple friends, right? The Indian friends like did a bunch of Indian things like Karva Chodh was where you celebrate your husband or whatnot and for his long life. And then we went to the temple and did more Hindu things, right? And so there's so many different activities that are culturally Indian and spiritually Indian. And I have always gravitated towards the spiritual, but there's like a, ooh, is that spiritual or is that cultural? Right. And so that's why I think, you know, you always say that the whole point of this entire book is to remember Krishna and never forget him.
Yep.
And I think that is the basis for everything we do.
And if, like you're saying, right, if you can think, oh, I'm worshiping Ganesh, but that connects me to Krishna because I think of him as this and that. If you can connect that, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna to what you're doing, then you're on the right path.
Hi-yo. What a sweet resolution. Bravo. I do have an interesting point about this and then it'll lead to a little question.
Yeah.
Because I think it's very interesting that Arjuna's asking this question in the first place. And let me explain, and then I want to hear some thoughts. I felt like I was just in the classroom setting up the lesson.
Pardon. Anyway.
So silly. Shama's all excited about learning Spanish, but
that was French. That was French. So, lo siento, amigas.
Está bien. So this question, I already said how it's a natural progression from the previous chapter, right? And Krishna in the previous chapter outlined a pretty black and white categorization of like the demonic nature and the nature of the more heavenly natures, right? Mm-hmm. So Arjuna could have just accepted that black and white categorization, but his inquisitiveness is actually showing a really beautiful quality of himself. Because in the previous chapter, Krishna already explicitly assured Arjuna that don't worry, you belong on the good side of this black and white categorization. You are like, you have a godly nature, you know, that was in chapter 16. And then his description of the ungodly nature matched very much Duryodhan on the dark side. So as far as Arjuna's own self-interest, he could have been like, cool, I'm good. I'm good. Exactly. So this was a comforting categorization for Arjuna. Yet he didn't just stop there. He wanted to know about the different shades of gray that demonstrated his eagerness for a more holistic understanding of reality and not just this self-congratulatory picture of things. So I think that looking at this question Arjuna's asking at the beginning of chapter 17 shows that we can resist the temptation to just reduce things to a very simplistic good, bad, mm-hmm. black, white, but seek a deeper understanding. And like a little summary of that would be that this question shows his unwillingness to settle for just these two, contrast, but want to understand even for the sake of others, all mm-hmm. the different shades.
Yeah.
So the question would be, what does Arjuna's question tell us about him? And how can we learn from Arjuna's question? Because I think this shows a lot about him.
I think that he's a very empathetic soul. Where he's like, he's asking this on behalf of us, but he also mm-hmm. realizes that human beings, we're complex creatures. We are multifaceted creatures with lots, we're like little onions, right? There's so many layers to us, and like categorizing in black and white and good and bad is like, it's, there's so much nuance there, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that he's doing it for our benefit.
Totally. Yeah, because for his own sake, he could have been like, I'm good. I'm on the winning side. I'm on the side of the angels. Yeah. Forget it.
Not only that, but I think he's showing what it's like to not just accept that you're good, but also try to understand beyond that. Like you were saying, right? Like, okay, let's see. For example, if we look at something of what we've talked about before is like people who have read the Bhagavad Gita or have read different texts and they understand it conceptually, but then mm-hmm. they don't necessarily adopt it into their lives, right?
Right.
So for those people, they might be thinking, I read it. I offer a fruit flower at home, mm-hmm. but they might be, I do service at the temple. I do this, I do that, whatever, right? Like they're mm-hmm. following the things, quote unquote, but then they might be mm-hmm. unkind to someone, or they might not see everyone the same. They might judge people differently based on their status mm-hmm. or their color of their skin or whatever it might be, right? These people are not doing what Arjuna is doing, which is saying, they're saying I'm good because I'm doing all the good things. Therefore, there's nothing there to improve. But Arjuna is saying, well, I know I'm good, but there's more information here that I can learn from.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You're saying that even sometimes we can kind of concoct our own ways and methods for faith and have our own ideas of what following scriptures is. And I want to understand that just in case so that I can learn from that, right? It's like if those people took the time to say, well, I'm doing all the right things. Is there anything else I could improve on? And is anything else I could understand?
How do I be better?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do I be better? And mm-hmm. what you said also, his curiosity. I never lose wanting to understand and go deeper in that curiosity, because mm-hmm. he was fine. He was on the angel side, mm-hmm. but he wanted to just understand the deeper picture. So
Yeah.
Cool.
Very cool.
All right. Text number two.
Shamasa Gita.
All right. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance. Now hear about this.
This is very interesting. Do you want to read the text one more time?
Yeah. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, said, according to the modes of nature acquired by the embodied soul, one's faith can be of three kinds, in goodness, in passion, or in ignorance. Now hear about this.
Ooh, cool.
I think our faith can be in those modes as well.
Exactly. This is the first time we're hearing that, because when I first read this super late last night, I was like, again, the modes? Haven't we talked about the modes?
Yeah. But
no, this is the first time we're connecting actually the recognizing what someone's level of faith is in relation to the modes of nature.
Yeah. If music can be in modes, if art can be in modes, if things we eat can be in modes, our actual faith itself is also in modes.
How would you describe passion, like faith in passion?
Ooh, is it like, Krishna, can you get me this like $10 million? I swear I'll use it for like good things. But like, if you could just slip it in my Venmo, that would be great.
Yeah.
Interesting. I was thinking, I think that works too, but I was thinking also someone who's like doing all of these services, but for recognition. So they're go. They're like, let me organize this. Let me do that. But it's not like,
selfless.
Yeah, not quite selfless. And it's like very passion.
Yeah.
You know, very like, go, being active. I'm going to do, I do everything. I do this, I do that. I do, but my faith, maybe, I don't know. Would that be?
And the point that you made is for recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But does that make it passion?
I think so.
Okay. That was just a thought.
That's my opinion. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's many different ways to see this. Like, I think we have to ask ourselves, what is faith, first of all? Because faith can be divided into different categories. I had read somewhere a little summary of this, and faith can be functional faith and ideological faith. So like functional faith is more how we, like our actions, how we believe the world should function, how we function in the world. And ideological faith would be just that, more about our beliefs of the ultimate reality. So then from there you have different, then we can maybe more clearly define, okay, with those two different interpretations of faith, then what would it mean to have faith in the different modes? So as far as like practical functional faith, maybe those who have faith in the mode of goodness want to resolve interpersonal issues through discussion. Those with like faith in the mode of passion, they want to dominate, like dominate the conversation.
But what is that in terms of like what?
Ooh,
like dominate a conversation or like what's just, let's say, context?
Any conversation with a person, like instead of just through a curiosity, like Arjuna showed a very mode of goodness understanding of a, like, let me be inquisitive. And
but wouldn't
and
that be character rather than faith? I'm just wondering, not to say that I know.
I was going to bring this up in the next text. So I think as we continue talking about faith, it's going to become more clear.
Yeah. Krishna explains it. I skipped ahead a little bit, but Krishna explains it a little bit more.
Because I think just for the sake of text too, this is just very straightforward Krishna's answer. He's just saying that, okay, we can look at the three modes and connect that to someone's level of faith. And that gives us an idea of where they're at with regards to their level of faith. So I think for now, that's basically what he's saying.
I kind of like text two, because if you read up until the Gita and you go to like literally chapter 17, text number two, it's like a cliffhanger. Cause like Krishna goes, now hear about this. And he's going to explain it.
Exactly, Shama. He's about to give different behavioral characteristics of understanding which mode a person's situated in. And then by there, where we can see their level of faith at. So he's connecting behavioral traits to faith in an interesting way.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's do it then. Shall we?
Text three,
Shyamali.
O son of Bharata, according to one's existence, under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. The living being is said to be a particular faith according to the modes he has acquired.
Isn't that the same sentence just twice? Mm-hmm. It's just in different words. Mm-hmm. Wait, can you repeat it again? Yeah. Or I'm crazy. Just go ahead.
No, it all starts blurring and then it's just, talking
this
about?
This is Krishna. Go ahead. Okay. You go first.
O son of Bharata, according to one's existence under the various modes of nature, one evolves a particular kind of faith. So let's pause there. Okay. That is saying.
That's nature.
Yeah.
This is nurture versus nature.
How we exist and how we operate. We're evolving a particular kind of faith based on our actions.
Like those wolves that, I'm going to make this up, okay? You guys correct them.
You say wolves?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I say
wolves? I thought you said woofs.
One of those woofs.
You definitely did.
Those dogs that woofs.
I definitely did. Okay, you say the correct word?
Wolves.
Yeah. So those that you put in the cold and then they develop like thicker fur or whatever. So we are the
wolves.
Yeah. Who, based on nature, we adopt. So based on what we're living, we adopt a particular kind of faith. Does that help or no?
Yeah, that's exactly.
I was just waiting for you to point to me again to say wolves. So I actually didn't listen to anything you said.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Anyways, go on.
I don't know where you're going. Go ahead.
So right. And the next line, the living being is said to be of a particular faith according to the mode he has acquired. So there is breaking down faith to be a little deeper than just faith, meaning do I believe in God or not? Faith has more to do with
the experiences we have and the things that have shaped us to believe something.
Exactly.
If we switch the word faith for believe, then it helps a little bit to interpret it, no? Like the experiences you have create what you believe in.
Yeah.
Right. So exactly. So there's two different types of faith here, which is what I was saying, functional faith and ideological faith, because in that sense, the modes determine one's functional faith, which is our belief in how things function in the world, how we need to function, what actions we're doing to create to perpetuate our nature. And that will determine which mode our faith is in. So that's on one hand, functional faith.
Okay. Let me put that in simpler terms.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
sorry.
No, that makes sense. So basically just like we said, what experiences you have make up what you believe.
Exactly.
If you are constantly having the experience of volunteering, it makes up someone who believes that volunteering is important. So totally. Whatever you consistently do is what belief you're fostering.
Exactly. Yes, exactly.
That's great. Yes? Okay. Yeah.
Exactly. And then on the other hand, we can separate that from our beliefs about the ultimate reality, or in other words, about God. That would be ideological faith. That's maybe what most people think of when they think faith, you know, and many times people's behavioral choices, or in people's behavioral choices, their functional faith frequently marginalizes or leads to, looking down upon certain groups of people based on our functional faith. So you have two different types. God, belief, all of those things is under ideological faith. Functional faith is how we, our actions inform how we think the world should work.
What's a simpler way of saying the ideological?
The knee bone is connected to the leg bone.
Yeah, no, I think ideological faith is just our belief in what's the ultimate reality.
But put it in simpler terms.
Like, do I believe in God? Do I not? Am I an atheist?
But is it a yes or no situation?
I think there's shades of gray, but I think what the Gita is doing here, it's offering a more holistic account of behavior in terms of these three modes. So people's behavior isn't just determined solely about their belief in God. So it's expanding what does belief and faith even mean. Normally people hear faith. Yes. Do you believe in God? Do you not believe in God? And here the Gita, Krishna is so like actually in a very, he's providing a very nuanced view of faith. Like, No, faith is a lot more nuanced. Faith is in these two different categories of functional faith, ideological faith. Functional faith being that first line of the purport or of the text, sorry, that according to our existence under various modes of nature, so according to how we act governed by a different mode of nature, we're going to evolve a particular faith. Basically, it's saying that faith isn't just something we believe in, but it's actually integral to our very existence about how we live. We are made of our faith, and as our faith is, so we will become in the future. Which is a really deep way of seeing faith that Krishna is delineating.
That's beautiful. Barely understood it. But I think the way that I read this is like, okay, oh, son of Bharata, Arjuna, like according to, like you're living under these three modes of nature.
Right.
And because of that, because of the world that you're living in, you evolve a particular type of faith.
Exactly.
Right? And then he's literally saying and he's doubling down. And so a particular type of faith you are acquiring because of the modes that you live in.
Exactly.
So if you,
you're born into poverty, for instance.
Yeah, I was literally thinking the same thing. Go finish.
If you're born into poverty, right?
Yeah.
And things are really, really hard for you, but there is, no, I don't know how to finish this.
Yeah. Okay, let's do it together. If you're born into poverty and there is faith in community because there's not that many resources, right? So you have a lot of camaraderie and teamwork and all of that. Hmm. That creates a certain belief that you can trust in your community and also and so on and so forth.
Yes.
And therefore, that means that because you have that belief, whenever you grow up and have your own communities or whatever, you foster that same belief of society and community.
Yes,
exactly. Yes. Of what you experience.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah. And using that example, then it would tie into our day-to-day actions. So that was what the example I gave, like those whose faith is in the mode of goodness, because I came from a very community-minded place. Mm-hmm. If I have a conversation, I'm going to like seek it as like a collaborative effort. We're going to try to understand each other, talk about it, approach it with curiosity versus shutting someone down and dominating. That's like mode of passion, the satriya, like, no, this is what's happening. I'm telling you, whatever.
So would you say that your faith is a byproduct of your environment?
That's kind of what I was gathering from this text as
well. It's like nature versus nurture, except here it's saying it's both. Like we come in with a certain nature, and then with our actions that we do, we're like, if I choose to continue associating with motive goodness people, I will continue. I'm informing who I'll become in the future based on my faith, my beliefs, my faith inform who I'm going to become. And here they're connecting faith to the three modes.
Right. So say you're born in an atheistic family. Both of your parents don't believe in God.
Right.
That is a particular existence that you were born into. That is going to actually affect how much faith that you have.
But if your nature is different than that of your parents, you might grow up to think, I don't know if I believe in God, so I might be agnostic. Mm-hmm. because I think there is something out there based on my own instinctive like nature.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But what I have been brought up in is that there is no God. And I'm questioning that. So I'm somewhere right in the middle of those two
interesting
situations.
Exactly. And even in the purport, it says, according to our particular type of faith, we associate with certain persons. So using Priya, your example, if someone thinks, I don't know if I agree with my parents, I might be more agnostic. I might be gravitated towards like, oh, someone who has a belief more in line with what I think, I'll go there. I'm following. Mm-hmm. And through your nature, you're following certain people and experiences which only continue creating the person you are going to become.
Your faith.
So yeah. Your faith is more than just yes or no, I believe in God.
Mm-hmm. It evolves.
Yeah, yeah.
And it grows. Yeah, that's super interesting.
Mm. It's just very interesting connecting it to mm-hmm. the three modes. It can be very deep. It's funny because like I think it sounds very overwhelming at first, but the more you hash it out, it's like, okay, this is a little more simple, but it's not. Mm. It's very nuanced.
Yeah, there's a particular line of the purport that I love. Mm. As long as one's faith is not completely in purified goodness, the faith is subject to contamination by any of the modes of material nature.
So say it one more time.
As long as one's faith is not completely in purified goodness, the faith is subject to contamination of any of the modes of material nature. So if you are not like completely like super Christian conscious with no expectations, you're doing everything that you do in your life because you want Krishna to be happy and for Krishna's pleasure. Mm. If you're not at that stage, your faith can be contaminated by the other modes.
Like makes sense.
It can be contaminated by, oh, I want to do this because I know I'll be recognized for this.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to worship this particular demigod because they're going to give me this type of money or this type of husband, you know?
It makes total sense. Yeah. I feel like a example that I might have brought up before is like this podcast. Every time we get together and we read, I feel like I am affected by the mode of goodness.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah,
and it's just the good association, the conversation, you know, and then there's moments where maybe I'm not so much in that mood. And I definitely feel that my faith maybe feeling a little shaken or moments of question or doubt. So definitely.
Shama, do you want to read the next line right after where you left off? Because that's one I actually underlined and read. Like it was beautiful.
Yeah. The contaminated modes of material nature expand to the heart. Therefore, according to the position of the heart in contact with a particular mode of material nature, one's faith is established.
Whoa. Yeah. So those two like kind of summarize nicely like this
break
whole-
Break it down.
Yeah, they break it down nice. Oh, you're telling me to break
it
down. Sorry, yes. Oh. Actually, Prabhupada breaks it down. He says it should be understood that if one's heart is in the mode of goodness, his faith is also in the mode of goodness.
What does that mean? Your heart to be in the mode of goodness?
So I think Krishna is really looking here, and I'm sure he's saying many things, but just first interpretation. What is our intention? You might be surrounded by the most lowly of low settings, but you're in your heart. You're like Krishna knows your heart. So if our heart in contact with a particular mode of nature, wherever our heart is at, whenever it comes into contact with the external world, we will choose to respond in a certain way. That will go either elevating our mode or like to goodness, our mode of or ignorance or passion, and that'll continue determining our level of faith. So if someone is surrounded by darkness, but their heart maybe is like, you can see someone's intention, they might be like not absorbing all of that external setting, but kind of wanting to seek out something else. And depending on the actions they choose to do, that will continue perpetuating what mode they operate in, which will inform where their faith is at. Because like, let's read again. The contaminated modes of material nature expand to the heart. All right. So goodness, passion, ignorance are connected to the heart.
But what does that even mean? That's what I'm trying to say.
Right. I think it's connected to an intention.
Right. So there, the next line then. Therefore, according to the position of the heart in contact with a particular mode of nature, one's faith is established. So depending on what's in my heart, when I come into contact with a particular mode of nature, whether it's with a person, an environment, whatever, depending on where my heart is at and depending on how I respond to that stimuli, my faith will be established depending on what I choose to do.
What if we change that word to intention? Like whatever intention is in my heart, if it comes into contact with ignorance or passion, it changes.
Yeah, that's more visually easy to understand.
Wait, say one more time.
If like it, the... If we use the word intention instead of heart, right?
Yeah.
And so if your intention is to love Krishna and you do everything for Krishna, but then it comes in contact with a mode of passion where it's like, oh, I need something or I need recognition for this. That intention is changed because you're interacting with a different mode.
That helps.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, that helps conceptualize it.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So we just got to keep our intentions in a good place.
And it's nice because it just shows a really compassionate side of Krishna. Krishna's almost even saying like, whatever's happening externally, it's about what's in your heart. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's really, really deep. And only Krishna really knows what's in our heart.
And I think that's a really empathetic God to be like, hey, I know that this Maya is really strong. This world is going to be really difficult. Your faith is going to be tested. There's going to be different interactions with these modes and it's going to change your faith. But here's how to do this. And like, he's literally like giving us the blueprint of how to overcome in this book as well.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about, Shama, earlier about when we come into contact with the different modes. And in that part of the purport, Prabhupada brings up the importance of the word shraddha, or faith, is really significant. And because it originally comes out of the mode of goodness. So one strong faith is supposed to be productive of works of material goodness. But in this material world, everything's a little contaminated. No work is completely purified. It's mixed. Nothing is in pure goodness because that's a transcendental quality. So Prabhupada says the real principle of religious faith is situated in the mode of pure goodness.
Shraddha. Mm-hmm. You know, that's my, you know what asta means?
What?
It means faith in the divine. Oh. Like intense faith in the divine. Oh, to have so asta sweet. In Bhagwan.
Oh, beautiful. And the God, yeah.
Very so, nice.
Shraddha, asta. Mm. All right. Text number 4.
Yeah.
All right. Priyadarshini.
Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons.
Whoa.
And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits.
All right. One more time, please.
Men in the mode of goodness worship the demigods. Those in the mode of passion worship the demons. And those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits.
Ooh, let's break this one down.
Can I say something to add an overarching umbrella to what we're about to read? Because this was almost, we were just talking about faith and now what? What are we talking about? So like it connects it all what we're about to see. Because I think to aid in assessing faith, because we're just talking about what is faith and we have this whole conversation. Basically, over the next texts, Krishna is about to analyze faith in terms of several important aspects of daily living. So here we're reading about the objects of worship, but then we're going to read about dietary choices, sacrifice, austerity, blah, blah, blah. All these different things that's like the practical day-to-day living.
Examples.
Exactly. Because faith is not just about what we believe, but how we live. So how we link with the rest of existence beyond ourselves. So Krishna's about to give some practical day-to-day examples.
It makes sense. Yeah, we're talking about faith, like obviously in terms of faith and God and all of that. So he's connecting it to worship, which is like one of the first aspects you think of about when you think about religion, faith, and all of that.
Yeah.
But so, what I find interesting is the mode of passion is someone you worship demons, but I actually understand it. As soon as I said it, I realized it.
Yeah. Prabhupada really, he goes into it, but let's go line by line, right? So men in the mode of goodness worship demigods, right? Prabhupada says that demigods include Brahma, Shiva, and others as Indra, Chandra, and the sun god. These are the various demigods. And I think that is mode of goodness because I was reading in Krishna book, like even in Krishna's day to day, Krishna would offer water to the sun god, like to Suryadev, right? Yeah. And so like, thank you so much for giving us sunshine and blah, 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 blah. And so like that is worship in the mode of goodness, right? Anything else on goodness?
I just want to say, but this is the part where I want to make a distinction that I think is there. Mode of goodness is not the same as
bhakti yoga.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Hi-oh.
And I think that's all I was even saying with my first question about the text one.
Yeah.
Where it's like, just because you're doing something good does not mean that you are actually worshiping Krishna.
Yeah.
And it doesn't hurt though.
No, I agree. That's why it's mode of goodness, right?
Okay, like, okay, it's still a positive thing. It's not bad though, right?
No, I know. I
want to get rid of my K2. Bottom line, let's get to the gym.
Appease my K2.
It's not bad. But I do think Krishna says multiple times in the book, like, you don't need all that. You just need me. But like, I'm just stating that as that. But it's not bad. It is mode of goodness. Goodness is good. It's just not as great as bhakti yoga. That's all. Just putting it out there.
Goodness is good. Yeah, good point. That's all you care
about. Okay, cool. Bad and ignorance is ignorance. Okay.
Ignorance is like so ignorant though.
Like, yeah.
Like, oh my God. Okay, and so now we're ready for passion. Ready? Mm-hmm. Okay, those in goodness worship. Okay, sorry, yeah. Similarly, those who are in the mode of passion worship the demons. We recall that during this.
Wait. Before you read that, can we give a regular example before we jump into that?
Yes. I gave an example in the purport that's interesting.
That's the one she's supposed to read.
To read it. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
You're going to And I'm also going to give a parallel example to today's
nowadays?
Society.
Okay.
Well, go ahead. About go the ahead. Same example.
Go ahead.
Proceed, this is professor. Interesting. Okay. We recall that during the Second World War, a man in Calcutta worshipped Hitler because thanks to the war, he had amassed a large amount of wealth by dealing in the black market. Cool. Okay, yeah. Thanks, Prabhupada. Okay. Similarly, those in the mode of passion and ignorance generally select a powerful man to be God. They think that anyone can be worshipped as God and that the same results will be obtained.
Ooh. Yeah. So basically when I read that and I was like, why would passion mean demons? That's so harsh. But then I realized what he's talking about is people with demoniac tendencies.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not talking because demons almost it sounds like a monster. It does sound outdated.
Like, but then, all right.
If you replace it with politicians, and I'm not saying all of them are bad, but if you just replace it with politicians and you're like, okay.
Even politicians like were people who were like, oh my God, but they put so much faith into this one person because they think they're gonna solve all their problems or make them rich or blah, blah, blah. Or even like those Babas in India that are like false, like they claim to be false gods. You know what I mean? Like people put all of their faith because they think that this one human being is going to give them all of the things that they want. So it's like, I think it's like worship of man.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
That's so interesting.
Very interesting.
Okay. Next one. Oh, it's me, I guess.
Yeah.
Those in the mode of ignorance worship ghosts and spirits.
Mm. That feels it's like ghost hunters.
Well, you know, more like,
What's those? Ghostbusters.
But like also people who do voodoo and like
kind of dark, the occult, dark energies.
The dark energies and whatnot. That is definitely, that stuff scares me.
Yeah.
Definitely. Witchcraft.
Voodoo,
who believe
black magic.
Like that's their worship. They feel like that's their connection to divinity and that's an intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and it's often not for a good thing. It's often to harm other people.
Well, even if it is for a good thing, it is in the mode of ignorance. So it doesn't elevate. Like, even if they're thinking like, let's see, let's find a positive in this.
In worshiping ghosts and spirits?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You're thinking Ghostbusters. Well, like, that was a fun movie.
No, what about like Dia de los Muertos?
I don't know what that is. Explain.
Yeah. Day of the Death.
Okay, so, but what is the point of the day of the... I've heard of this festival.
It's... I am not Mexican, so I will do my best.
I'm not Mexican either, Shama.
Shama just looked at us like,
one of you should know. No,
but it is honoring those who have passed. Those who have passed,
right? So those that are dead.
I think...
The spirits of their ancestors.
Yeah. Oh. I think if you... Two things. One, if you think that's the end all be all and like they're going to save me... then maybe that's not great. But I think it's not good when you're trying to gain some material thing from worshiping ghostly energies.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between worship and
honor.
Pay homage.
Yeah,
homage to, okay? Right? Because even in Vedic literature, it is important to pay homage. Homage?
Is that Vedic?
What, is that Vedic or is that Indian?
No. Even like, no, that is Vedic. No, I think that's Vedic actually.
I just asked the
There's
question.
There's Vedic. I'll find some proof for it. But there is times of the year where like, I don't know if Krishna said, I need to figure out who said it.
Maybe Shiva said it.
Maybe. But it is a time to worship, or not worship, but pay homage to the ancestors, right? And that is part of it, right? Because we ask for blessings, we ask for forgiveness, and hopefully their journeys are okay. Perhaps. I need to find
that sound. Like one of those that I'm not sure about.
Worship and homage are different.
Exactly. Yeah. I agree. But I don't...
Worship and homage. My brain is just processing that.
No, yes. Because like...
I agree also.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Cool. I agree. I was just trying to come up with something to like see a different... Because if you just think about like, oh, witchcraft and this and that and that. Okay, oh, wait. Okay, I have one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, like what about someone who's like, they don't know anything about religion. They didn't grow up in that. They just, you know, they do witchcraft, but it's like for healing. or like, but
witchcraft
still,
for healing.
Yeah, I think santeros, ooh, you know whatever.
What? I think we would have two categories. What's your intention? Their intention might be in the mode of goodness, with the external environment being in the mode of ignorance or passion.
But
right?
In this case, we're just talking about worship in the modes of these, and I'm wondering, you know,
right,
like
right,
I was
right.
just trying to think of perspective. But anyways. Not that we know so much about that. If you know about it, share with us. We'd love to know more.
I think that's where we would be Arjuna and ask for their shades of gray. Be like, okay, I hear you, Krishna, with these two black and white categories, but there are in-betweens. What if someone within the witchcraft world has
that's
the
definitely.
Heart of gold and, you know.
Yeah.
Probot says, it is clearly described here that those who are in the mode of passion worship and create gods, right? So you're creating.
Say that again. You said it so fast.
Oh, sorry. Those who are in the mode of passion worship and create such gods, right?
Okay.
So we're creating a god out of a man, right?
Mm-hmm.
And those who are in the mode of ignorance in darkness worship dead spirits. So sometimes these people worship at the tomb of some dead man.
Mm-hmm.
So I think worship and homage are different, guys.
That's the conclusion.
I think that's how we're going to leave this
episode. I think that's the conclusion.
Yeah, yeah.
Homage.
Yeah. And ghosts. Yeah. Interesting. Anyways, I think that Krishna is going to go deeper and deeper into this. So please join us next time where we tackle chapter 17, text number 5.
See you next time.
Bye-bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.